We are indeed blessed with some great song leaders and some beautiful songs. Tonight's lesson is going to be entitled The Fine Art of Forgetting. I couldn't get forgetting out of my mind. We're having a seminar this afternoon about forgetting that is not a fine art. It is something that affects a great many people and has affected probably someone in all of our families. And that's going to be on Alzheimer's. And that seminar is going to begin at 2:30 and it'll go till about 5. And invite all of you to come and be there. If you are concerned about the disease, if you're facing it, it'll be a very informative and I believe very helpful seminar for all of us this afternoon at 2:30. And 2 weeks from, is that right? We have two more Sundays left in October. And then we have the very first Sunday in November, November the 5th. And that will be our anniversary Sunday. And please make it a point to be here. On that Sunday, we will not have an 8 o'clock service. We'll have a 9:30 combined Bible class. We'll have a 10:30 worship service. Brother Melvin Ote, who was with us for our summer series, will be our speaker on that Sunday. And it will be a tremendous day for us. Make your plans to be here. That is a part of the bags of groceries. We're already filling those up and bringing those in. And make sure that you are getting yours back in. We have 325 sacks that have been picked up. And if all 325 sacks which have been picked up are brought back in, we'll have more than enough to handle our giving groceries to those who come to us in need of groceries. And if you'll be willing to do that for us, we'll fill the stage up with those bags and we will have enough to take care of us for the next year. Also, keep in mind that on Anniversary Sunday, two other things. That's the day we roll our clocks back. So you get an extra hour of sleep. You don't have to come at 8. You get an extra hour of sleep. And we have a shortened service. A shortened day because we'll not have an evening service that day. But it'll be a great day for us. So make your plans to be with us. And there was something else I was going to say, and I remembered that. And I've forgotten the other one. The fine art of forgetting. And I need to work on the class. I'll think of it eventually as we go through. And I'm trying my best now. But if I think of it and I interrupt the lesson, then you'll understand. This too will pass. It might not. Have you ever had one of those moments? What have your stuck in time moments been? We all have them. I remember when I was a little kid, the stuck in time moment was waiting for the next Christmas. Or the stuck in time moment was waiting for school to end. And it just wasn't fair that you were only out 3 months, then you had to go right back. But those were the stuck in time moments. One of the stuck-in-time moments was waiting for the day I could get my driver's license. And there were a lot of stuck-in-time moments. Since driver's license and graduation from high school and college, stuck-in-time moments have become a lot more serious. And they seem to be a lot more devastating. But we all have them. Sometimes I refer to it as being in God's waiting room. But when you're stuck in time, and you don't think what you're going through is ever going to go away, it will. And it's heading us somewhere. Every second, we've just passed one. Every minute, every day is a moment in time. And that second, that minute, that day, that moment in time, every single one of them moves us away from something. And we call that second that has just passed the past. The hour that is just gone is the past. And every single one of those moments move us away from the past. Some of that past we're glad to leave. Some of that past we wish we could hold on to. But not only does it move us away from things, it moves us towards something. It moves us toward a future that we're excited about, or it moves us toward a future that we are regretting, or not looking forward to at all, or dreading, or it moves us to a future that we're hoping never comes, that we don't want to even think about, that we don't want to even consider. But every second is moving us closer and closer to it. Every second is moving us closer and closer to death. And we have no set time frame known to us as to when that will occur. We have no idea. But every second we live moves us closer to it. And it also moves us closer every day that we live to the day of judgment. I want you to read with me again these verses from Acts chapter 17. And I want you to look carefully at what is said in these two verses that are given to us, when the Apostle Paul is delivering this sermon on Mars Hill in the city of Athens. He says in verse 29, that's where we'll begin the reading. It's not the beginning of his speech, but it comes to the point that he wants to conclude with. And verse 29 says, being then the children of God, and all of us are, by right of creation. Not all of us are by faith and trust, but all of us are by right of creation. And so he will say to these pagans, being then the children of God, and all of us, being then the children of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold, or like silver, or like stone, an image formed by the art and thought of man. Translations will read differently. Instead of the thought of man, some will have the design of man. But the idea of design is coming out of man's thinking. He designed it. He saw it in his mind, and then he built it. Saw it in his mind, and then he shaped it. The first things that he mentions, these images of gold and these images of silver, are just examples of what he's actually talking about. And when he comes down to us considering God, the main point that he's making is because we are God's children, then we ought not to consider God to be a product of us. He is not a product of us. He is not something we invented, nor that human beings long ago invented. And what he hits at is the heart of the fact that we should never consider God to be nothing more than what I think he is, to be nothing more than what I imagine in my own thoughts. And that's something so hard for us to get away from. We're heading toward a judgment. And this judgment will be before the God who is not like what we think, and who is not like what we imagine, but who is exactly like what he said, exactly like what he revealed himself to be. He says then, because we're heading toward this judgment, therefore, having overlooked the times of ignorance, God is now declaring to all men that all people everywhere should repent. Doesn't God accept all people just like they are? No. God is demanding that all men everywhere repent, which means come to an understanding and a realization of all the things that he has revealed to all human beings. And that he gets to in the next verse. Because he has fixed a day. It's a day fixed by him, an appointment made by him for all humanity, all the ones that have ever lived, all the ones that are ever going to live, which is why every person is going to be raised from the dead. But every person being raised from the dead is not going to be a joyous event for every person. But he's fixed a day in which he will judge the world, and he will judge the world in righteousness. Not according to what I think he ought to judge me by. Not according to the way I think he should look at me. But he will judge the world in righteousness through a man. A human. Not humans and not men. But one man. One human. And he's given proof of who that will be by raising him from the dead. That man is Jesus. And every human being will be judged by him. And they will be judged by him in righteousness. Every second we live, we move closer to our death. And after our death comes the judgment. So this world will pass and the things in it. And we are heading towards something that will not go away. It will happen and occur and then eternity. Next one. This too will pass is not true of everything. Do you realize that? Not everything will pass. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 24, verse 35, when he's talking to his disciples about the destruction of Jerusalem, and he draws a parallel between that destruction of Jerusalem and his second coming, he says this, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away." What is heaven and earth? Heaven and earth are used in different ways, and they refer to different things. Heaven is referred to at times as the place of God, where the throne of God is, and where God lives, and where we will be going. That's not the heaven that's used here. That's not the idea of heaven that is used by Jesus when he says these words. When he says these words, heaven and earth, he's talking about what we consider space. All that we see above us. The air around us, the air where the birds fly, the air that we call our atmosphere, the air that is above the atmosphere, the space where the stars and the moons and the galaxies are. Heaven and earth, this planet on which we live, heaven and earth will pass away, but his words will never pass away. That's the reality of time. Every second we live, and whether or not we pay attention to his words, they will not leave us. They will not leave us alone. And we will never escape responsibility for them. Because heaven and earth will pass away, but his words will never pass away. When we pull these two verses together, it brings us down to a question that every single one of us has got to deal with. And so many times it is so easy because we are Christians. And don't we come to Bible class? Aren't we part of our church groups? Don't we attend and don't we partake of the Lord's Supper? And because we're doing all of that, we gather the idea that it doesn't really matter what we're doing from day to day and how we are living and the things we're engaged in and the things we're not engaged in. But the question that comes from these two truths is this. Does Jesus have a claim on your life? And that question is asked in two senses. The first sense is this. Does Jesus have a claim on your life? Does Jesus have a right to claim that your life is not yours, it's his? Does Jesus have the right to claim and to hold me responsible for on this day of judgment? That your life wasn't yours, your life was mine. The answer is yes. He has that right because he's the creator of it. He has that right because he's the redeemer of it. He bought it back. He redeemed it from all the things it was doing contrary to why God created it. And he will be the judge of it. He is the judge who decides whether this life was used properly or not. Whether this life was used in keeping with what it was designed to do or not. And he will be the judge then of whether this life that was lived, if it was in keeping with what it was designed to do, it will live forever. If it was not in keeping with what it was designed to do, it will be destroyed. It will come to an end, and it will come to death. How do we find out? His words. They will never pass away. So, does Jesus have a claim on your life? Yes, he does. He created it. He redeemed it. And he will judge it. So we ask the question one more time. Do you recognize and honor his claim on your life? Adam and Eve came to the point where they decided, this is our choice, this is our life, we'll do what we want. And they lost the garden. What do we do with our life? Do we recognize and honor God's claim on it? Or do we do what we want to do? Every second, every minute, every day, we're moving toward our accountability of those questions. And we will not avoid them. We will not escape them. We are headed to them. How are you doing with Christ? How's your life with him? Are you ready to become a Christian? Do you need to come home to him? We offer you his invitation as together we stand and as we